Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Since I spoke with you last week when I was in Brittany on the north of France, I've been in the French Pyrenees and moving throughout southern France, including Cathar country. I'm now in Toulouse, and my days have been filled with just the most incredible beauty, artists, castles, oceans, mountains, and museums. Some of the stops are on my Twitter feed if you want to see a little bit more about some of the places I visited, and with wonderful people. Marvelous family here in southern France who really extended themselves to show me the beauty of this country and of the people. I'm very deeply appreciative. Hold that date, September 22nd. I'll be in Asheville, lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore at the Biltmore Estate. It's up at Slayer.com. I think we only have a few more tickets available. Just click on Lunch with Catherine. But if you want to get a ticket, I'd get it now. Rise of the Asian Consumer. I was supposed to have that written up for you long ago. The audio's ready. Please listen if you haven't listened to the audio. I think it's very important, but we'll have the PDF out next month. This is one of these big trends you really need to integrate, like space or the slow burn or some of the others we focus on here at the Slayer Report. The message, of course, from all of this is inflation and the competition for resources is going to grow more intense, and you need to really integrate that into your planning. It turns out on my way to Italy, I'm going to stop in Amsterdam to attend a workshop that Ulrich is teaching on the Keys of Enoch. I've added it to the events section so that you can take a look at it if you're going to be near Amsterdam on October 12th and 13th or want to fly to Europe to attend. If you haven't listened to Ulrich's new series or episode for the Future Science series, Wave Genome, I strongly recommend it. The feedback is tremendous. In fact, you can look at the comments on the commentary at the Slayer Report. After Amsterdam on October 12th and 13th, I'll then head to Lake Constance and then Italy, and then we'll be attending with Ulrich and speaking at the Scientists for Peace conference, and that's going to be between Rome. It's in a medieval village between Rome and Florence, so that's October 19th, 21st, and then I'll be back in the United States, and that should be the travel for 2018. Our theme tonight is a crack in the U.S. dollar dam. The Germany's foreign minister called for the creation of a new payment system independent of the U.S., so an alternative for SWIFT for Europe. I've always said that sanctions would be the end of the dollar, but I think it's going to take a lot longer than anyone else expects. Merkel had just met with Putin and made clear that Maas was the foreign minister, was not speaking for the government. I think Germany and everyone else is trying to get out of the U.S. dollar bear trap, and they're feeling that as the Fed continues to raise interest rates. They indicated again just recently that they're going to raise again in September. William Engdahl described the U.S. bear trap as follows. I thought it was an interesting description. Quote, if Washington succeeds on November 4th in cutting all Iran oil exports, world dollar oil prices could soar above $100, adding dramatically to the developing world dollar shortage. This is war by other means. The Fed dollar strategy is acting now as a silent weapon for not-so-quiet wars. If it continues, it will deal a serious setback to the growing independence of the Eurasian countries around the China New Silk Road and the Russian-China-Iran alternative to the dollar system. The role of the dollar as lead global currency, reserve currency, and the ability of the Federal Reserve to control it as a weapon of massive destruction and a strategic pillar of American superpower. Are the nations of Eurasia or even the ECB ready to deal effectively? Well, ECB is part of it because they're basically winding up their equivalent of quantitative easing. So again, I as I've said for the last 2 years, I think the U.S. dollar bear trap is still a real possibility. And we're seeing sort of hiccups, explosions, and controlled demolitions in the emerging markets more today if you were following the markets. Each time the U.S. uses sanction or plays this kind of economic warfare, the more the world seeks to build mechanisms to create liquidity without us, which is why I've always said this comes back to weaponry, because ultimately where it leads is war, as economies just get to the point where they refuse to be harvested and think they can use their military to prevent it. As I said, The Economist several years ago wrote a great piece on the dollar and called it dominant but dangerous, and I think that there's no better description for where we are. And the reality is that if the bear trap doesn't work and you get enough pushback from other places, the U.S. could be sitting in a situation where, in fact, the inflation gets strong and goes even into hyperinflation. Again, I think the leadership will take us into war first. Either way, what it means is that you and I are in the same position as countries all around the world. We all need redundancy and resiliency. So countries need redundancy and resiliency in their payment mechanisms, and so do we. Money and markets. The U.S. dollar now up 3.62% for the year at 95+. The central bankers are meeting at Jackson Hole, and the Fed, as I said, is indicating a rate hike in September. So just making dollars more expensive. TLT, the long treasury, improved a bit. It's now down 2.46% for the year. The intermediate ETF, treasury ETF, now down 1.32%. And the bond aggregate down less than a point, 0.87%. Junk holding steady, up 1.1%. So junk is the only representative ETF in the fixed income markets that's been positive for the year. The equities, the S&P now up 8.15%. Home builders down 8.13%. That's an improvement. The European ETF, VGK, down 2.08% for the year. Germany down 6.36%. The developed markets minus North America down 2.2%. China large caps down 6.23%. China small caps down 7.91%. Emerging markets down 7.54%. Commodities now down for the year, minus 1.42%. They're following China down. Gold down 8.39%, silver down 13.2%, and oil, still the star, up 16.36%. U.S. equity markets. The Financial Times had a very interesting piece sort of describing the success of this last surge or bull market in the S&P since the bailouts and the financial crisis. The S&P is now gone for 3,500 days. It's technically it's 3,454 days without a drop of 20 to 25% or more. That's the longest ever period it's done that, longer than the dot-com boom. The tech revolution has revised what is in and out of the different indices, whether it's the S&P and the Dow. According to the Financial Times, the largest companies in the index by market cap when this run started in the bailout period, in the financial crisis, were ExxonMobil, Walmart, and Microsoft, respectively. Now they are Apple, Amazon, and Alphabet. So you're seeing a real leadership of the tech stocks. So what has happened to support the market? Yes, tax cuts help, but the big driver has been stock buybacks. They're propping up the earnings per share and, of course, making the market less liquid, more thin, and more centrally controlled. The buybacks have helped the S&P companies report back-to-back quarters of nearly 25% earnings per share growth this year. So, you know, the financial engineering is what's growing the market, not real income as most people think of it. So obviously, repatriation of U.S. profits from abroad has helped. buybacks this year are expected to be as much as $1 trillion, which is a phenomenal amount if you look at the number of companies also, as more mergers continue, the float consolidates, and a lot of companies don't want to go public given all the difficulties. So there's a real issue as to where the, you know, simply you're monopolizing, if you will, in the U.S. markets. The really dynamic increase in companies is coming in the emerging markets, not here. The Financial Times also points out that the annualized pace of rise in the stock market is lower than historically. Historically, it's been 22% during bull periods, and this time it's 16.5%. I really think part of that is technology squeezing margins out of almost everything. The swamp drama. I want to talk a little bit more about the swamp drama than I usually do. The swamp drama being my nickname for all things related to Trump and the squabbles around the president. I want you to learn to look at the world from the oligarch's point of view, because right now we're watching the U.S. transform from the system that it's been operating on for the last 20 years during the financial coup into a much more boldly oligarchical system. We see this week Mueller announce, well, Paul Manafort has been in trial, and the jury came back convicting him on 8 counts, which is a little bit less than half, I believe. If you really look at what's going on, his prosecution and his indictment and prosecution and conviction had nothing to do with Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. So it's very much out of the scope of Mueller's investigation. But of course, what's he trying to do? He's just trying to squeeze Manafort to try and get Manafort to give up Trump in some way. I also happen to think that the powers that be want Paul Manafort as far away from the Trump administration as possible. They have a big investment in getting Trump in, and the last thing they need are people like Manafort hanging around. He's the ultimate in swamp critters. Then Michael Cohen, the president's personal attorney, a plea deal was announced with Mueller on 8 counts. I think that's also stacking functions. They want to keep Cohen, again, away from the Trump administration. If you look at some of the deals he was doing as soon as Trump won, there was just too much sort of smell coming in that direction. So it wouldn't surprise me, again, if this is stacking functions. But clearly, Mueller is squeezing and using dirty tricks to do it. So he's busted attorney-client privilege in an outrageous way for any client, let alone the president of the United States. And if you look at the reasons that Cohen did a plea deal, it looks like he was threatening Mueller was threatening Cohen's wife with prosecution and talking about, you know, basically the rest of his life in jail. So you're talking about some witch hunt tactics. In addition, we have a major story in the New York Times this week about the White House counsel working and meeting with Mueller, and much of this, of course, was done with the permission of the president and the recommendation of his attorneys. However, the Times went into great length to point out that the White House counsel had decided Trump was setting him up and had really gone beyond the limit to ingratiate himself to Mueller and the Mueller's team. So who knows what that's all about? I will tell you, there's no more important position to the powers that be than White House counsel and the Secretary of the Treasury. So whenever you see goings on around that position that might be shifting someone out and someone in, if the oligarchs are building up to big prioritization, it wouldn't surprise me if they wanted to swap in a different person for White House counsel, but they don't have to do that until next year, really, for things, or certainly after the election. So be interesting to see if the White House counsel bites the dust after the election is over. So far, there's absolutely no evidence of any Trump collusion with Russia the Russian government or Putin during the campaign. There's significant evidence of a false frame effort by the Department of Justice and the FBI and the Clinton campaign working closely and intimately together to frame Trump for such. Now, why would they do that? There are many different reasons, but the reality is Trump does have, as I've always said, a real Russian mafia problem. Now, Trump's not the only one. If you look at where the Russian mafia problem came from, it came from the Department of Treasury, the Department of State, the CIA, and probably the DOJ, FBI, and NSA teaming up with the Harvard Corporation during the after the wall came down, and going in and doing piratizations and laundering tremendous amounts of money out of Russia with the help of the Russian mafia. So certainly the Russian mafia was a problem before, but it was one tightly controlled behind the Iron Curtain. Thanks to the United States, we blossomed it into the well into the Ukraine and well into Israel and well into New York City. We had made an effort to bring them in the 80s. I remember sitting with one very wealthy real estate developer in New York, real estate investor, I should say, who'd had a successful career at one of the major firms on Wall Street before he went into private real estate investment. And he basically said, "Oh, no problem. You want to get the New York economy going? We'll just bring in, 1,000 entrepreneurs from the Black Sea and that'll do it." Well, of course, what do you think that is going to be? Anyway, if you go seriously into Trump's background and you look at how much business he did with the sort of oligarchic and Russian mafia interests, he's clearly done plenty of business. If you're interested, I would see Russ Baker's website. And he's written some pieces on the extent to which Trump is married to the mob. The problem you have in trying to make a big deal about Trump's relationship with the mob is that we really, during the campaign, had a competition between Ivy League mobsters versus the Backstreet Boys, who seem to have teamed up with the military. It's really mob wars. And if you look at anything Trump's done, it's nothing compared to what the Clintons have done. So when the Rockefeller Syndicate decided to squeeze out the Italian mafia and take over organized crime directly, this is part of the blowback of what comes with not having any intermediaries. I would say the chances of impeachment are currently very low. Trump has been a huge success so far. Let's look at his 10 major accomplishments from the oligarchic point of view. He's got the right folks in at the Fed as the chairman and going in as governors. He's got the right folks going into the Supreme Court. The stock market is an all-time high, which means that, and it's diverging against all the other markets, continuing higher while the rest are going down. So it's got the lowest cost of equity, or the U.S. and the syndicate, if you will, have the lowest cost of equity capital in the world. That's a combination of bailouts, missing money, plus high PEs, all reflecting massive government subsidy, in my opinion. He's achieved tax reform. That was quite a political feat by the Republicans. Capital repatriation is now underway. He's pushing privatization very aggressively, and nobody's kind of noticing. They're jumping up and down and excited about certain things, but they're not really noticing where that could go. He's stripping the Office of Personnel Management, the career establishment, and really helping to make the government look sufficiently dysfunctional so that dysfunction creates popular support for privatization. We need government to work. It's not going to work in the political mechanism, so let's turn everything over to the corporations. So, and if you look at what the oligarchs want to do, they want those assets in play. They want to get out of some or all Social Security or engineer much greater control using Social Security or welfare or anything coming out of the federal budget, whether it's a trust fund or an entitlement. And they want tighter central control, and they may want to abrogate the the debt. Let's see. I have a hard time believing that that's the case if they can just print more money. There's no doubt if you look at the subsidy to be gained by maintaining the reserve currency, it's enormous. The challenge is if you're not going to maintain it, you might as well let things crash and pick everything up for pennies on the dollar, which is what they did in Russia. And one of the reasons I'm concerned that the rape of Russia is coming to the United States eventually. Okay, so let's keep going on the things that Trump has accomplished. He's produced the ultimate in entertainment and distraction. So no one even noticed that the Bohemian Grove met or even contemplated what decisions they made because everything was completely whited out by Trump's meeting in Helsinki with Putin. It was quite amazing the extent to which it just provided extreme whiteout, and in a terribly interesting way. Now, what's to white out? Well, maybe you need to white out the fact that we're making America great again for the oligarchs. It's very similar to Lewinsky. I remember when the Monica Lewinsky thing was happening in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. It just, you couldn't get anybody to have a serious conversation. I kept trying to say $59 billion money is missing from HUD. This is very dangerous. You know, and the housing bubble is exploding and this is very dangerous. No one wanted to hear it. No one wanted to hear it. You know, you had one category of people who just wanted to talk about the sexual implications. But then you had another category of very high IQ sophisticated people who were just so embroiled in the legal details of what was going on with a special prosecutor and this and that. I mean, it blew up into enormous legal and financial complexity, and everybody was fascinated, just like it was some kind of new Netflix series. It was a, you know, it was a swamp drama, and it was a series, and it went on forever, and there were unbelievably important things going on, whether it was the housing bubble or the money going missing and the complete breakdown of internal financial controls, really the engineering of an entire financial coup d'etat. And you couldn't get anybody interested in discussing the financial coup d'etat, let alone seeing it, looking at it, dealing with it, stopping it. They were all too interested in Monica Lewinsky's blue dress and who had the blue dress. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was just unbelievable. While the country's just walking out the front door and the back door, they're obsessed with Monica Lewinsky's blue dress. Anyway, so it feels very much like that. And the reality is, if you look at what's going on, so let's look at the next thing Trump has accomplished for them. He's promoting large military and space expenditures and getting it accomplished. And the military is standing down on thermal gentrification. Well, certainly in the NATO countries, it's going on. It's gone on a bit from what it looks like to me in Greece and Portugal, probably Spain, Canada, and several places around the United States. But this can only happen. The military controls airspace. So if you are basically creating fires with some kind of technology from above, whether it's lasers or directed energy or Joseph Farrell has another theory on what it could be, who knows what the technology is, you can't implement that technology unless the military either implements it or stands down. My vote is standing down. I think for secrecy purposes, they're going to use private contractors. And of course, the mercenary capacity has reached that level that it could be. Now think about the power of Trump's ability to distract and entertain. I mean, we literally have thousands of Americans being targeted with fire and driven out of their homes, even killed. And no one's talking about it. Nobody's noticing it. They're too into hating or loving Trump. It's quite phenomenal when you think about it as an exercise in mass media and mind control. Anyway, so Trump is not only engineering or helping to have an administration that's engineering what you and I would have thought was impossible a year ago. But absolutely no one's interested in what's really going on with thermal gentrification. Israel, so let's look at number 9. Israel free to genocide in Gaza and become a religious state. It's almost as though, you know, if you look at all the different things that's going on, who can afford to use bullets to stop Israel from doing what, you know, what they've been trying to do in slow motion for decades. And then finally, the Trump administration is proceeding forward with the missing money fixes. So we saw last week the Federal Financial Accounting Standards Board come out with a promulgation that essentially DOD could cook the books. So make no mistake about it. The response to the $21 trillion is to pretend they're doing an audit. But since they can't do an audit and come up accurately, given the reality, now they're basically being given formal approval to cook the books when, in fact, that's in violation of the Constitution and the financial management laws, and they're not going to bother to change it. The person, as I described last week, the person at the accounting board said that if they didn't do this, in fact, they would have to redact the government financial statements. You just can't make this up. But remember, this is Trump implementing it. That's $65,000 per person. And if you look at his, basically what he's saying is the federal government is operating completely outside the Constitution and the financial management laws. And I, Donald Trump, am going to facilitate making that possible. So for everybody who's a wild Trump supporter, just contemplate what that means, whether whether you think that's more important or you think thermal gentrification. But whether it's thermal gentrification or missing money, it's a demonstration of Donald Trump is not in a position to solve the deep, big problems here. Okay, now, I said the chances of impeachment are very low. I listed all the different things Trump has done to deliver for the, call it the deep state, if you will, what they want. The reality is that in theory, if the Democrats won the House and Senate, they could be in a position to swing an impeachment. I still think it would be unlikely, even in that case. I think it's very unlikely that they're going to get the House and Senate and be in a position to do that. But obviously, there's always a percentage chance. In the meantime, they can and will engage in trench warfare. What do they want to do? The big one is they want to hold up Kavanaugh's nomination. I think the thing the Democrats are most afraid of is the changes that are coming in terms of the leadership of the Supreme Court. The problem with all of this, whether it's trench warfare for the Democratic purposes or, basically creating sufficient distraction so that the oligarchs can continue their march, for all the different reasons this may work for the top leadership, the problem is you're projecting a global brand of a failed state. When you ask people in Europe, what do you think is happening in the United States, they just say you're failing. Now, that could be a cover for the march of the oligarchs. Let's see if the U.S. dollar bear trap works or not. One of the other things this all means is that if you look at the bounce that's happened from capital repatriation, the bounce that's happened from tax reform, the bounce that's happened from making the U.S. the preferred safe haven for money around the globe, this is all going to keep the economy strong for some period of time. But if you're going to keep the U.S. stock market high, after these things, you're going to need the next thing. And, of course, I think that's privatization. I'll be talking more about that with Harry Blaser in a couple weeks. We're going to focus on what's coming in terms of privatization. So be on the lookout for that. A few other stories I wanted to mention to you this week. One is the president has proposed the SEC move to 6 months earning report. Now, the symmetry of the U.S. government deciding that it can officially, according to accounting standards, cook its book for classified projects, the fact that it's followed out literally almost the next day by proposing that we no longer, that corporations don't have to report quarterly, but every 6 months, I think it's not a coincidence. There is absolutely connection here, because the more you cook the government books, the harder it is for the corporations to sort of match with theirs. The complexity gets too great. So, and the reality is there are many good arguments for and against on this. So it's a way more complicated issue. But I think what I wanted to point out was the alignment between the extreme dependencies of our corporate infrastructure and the military-industrial complex. And as we push secrecy in the military-industrial complex and cookbooks, it's going to, you know, the corporations are going to follow along. Another story, very interesting story in The Atlantic, which I posted up on the website. Chinese antiquities are disappearing around the globe, and many people have reason to believe it's the Chinese government. So whether it's the Chinese government or the Chinese deep state, that wouldn't surprise me in the least, but it's a very interesting phenomena, and it will show you a little bit about the Chinese. Hurricane Lane coming up on Hawaii did a right turn at the last minute. One wonderful subscriber has been sending me messages about it. And the question is, you know, was that prayer or a miracle or simply Hawaii in negotiation and Hawaii said uncle? So your guess is as good as mine, but I would say that's a remarkably suspicious-looking right turn. Danger ahead. I just wanted to give you a flash warning. I put up a video on the website of former CIA official Phil Mudd debating with a gentleman named Paris Stenhard about whether or not Brennan's security clearance should be pulled, and the issue of the president pulling Brennan's security clearance. And it's worth watching, because what you're seeing is someone who was in the world of government very, very accomplished in terms of their position and responsibilities in the CIA, literally not be able to face reality and literally lose their temper over someone very graciously trying to explain the truth. They can't face the truth, and they would rather have an emotional meltdown on national TV rather than face the truth, let alone deal with the truth. So I'm seeing more and more people who can't face the truth and can't evolve with the world and can't handle the change. And it's sobering, because what you realize is they literally, you know, it's so important when the world is changing that you find a way to evolve your situation so that you don't get run over by the change. And now we're talking about more and more people who literally cannot handle the change. And of course, my goal in the Salieri Report is to make sure you are one of them. It's very, very important to me that you survive and thrive. But I was watching this video. I found it very sobering. It's the former CIA official. It's a guy named Phil Mudd. And again, he was debating with a guy named Paris Stenhard, who I've never seen before, but I thought was quite good. But it kind of made me realize that we're going into an environment where there are literally millions of people who, you know, this is like a wave. You need to let it roll over, and you need to not engage with them and not fight with them and not, you need to let them just sort it out on their own. There's nothing you can say or do. And they just need to go off in a corner and sort it out themselves. So these kinds of situations can get very dangerous depending on who the person is and how they relate to you. And it's pretty sobering to think about it. And I think part of it is because the mind control is so very significant. If you've never dealt with mind control programming or people who've had serious mind control programming, it's a big phenomenon. It's one of the reasons we're, for the next 2 weeks on the Salieri Report, we're going to be talking about it, because I think it's very, very helpful if you understand it to be prepared to rock and roll in what's coming. So whether it's, you know, fire with 5 minutes to get out, or extreme privatization of federal, state, and local operations, you need to go through your finances and balance sheet and see where you are strong or vulnerable, and make sure you have the resiliency to deal with what's coming. Two things I always mention: you need a great bank, and you need to do a great job of archiving your records. He who archives bounces back quickly. Okay, our hero this week is the California firefighters. I always like firefighters, whether they're professional or volunteer. We've got great volunteer group in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. Two stories that I put up related to the firefighters: Verizon cut access according to their plan on firefighters, making life much more difficult for them. And now we have another story: AT&T signing everyone up for a network that was sponsored through the U.S. government. I find both of those equally frightening. I think firefighters could find themselves facing fires where the arsonists essentially command their information and telecommunications if you're not careful. And you're in a situation where you're dependent on big corporations. And things could get easy to manipulate, whether it's the corporations manipulating them or other parties who are hacking in. And the reality is, if you're dealing with a fire that was started with the kind of weaponry that it appears some of the California fires have been started with, you're talking about people who have pretty phenomenal cybersecurity capacity. So the last thing you want to be is out dealing with a fire where various people are manipulating your information and telecommunications to help make that fire really go. That's a frightening and dangerous situation. So you need to develop alternative plans for communication. I don't know if walkie-talkies will work. I don't know if you can use the old-timey systems. But make sure, if you're a volunteer or professional firefighter, or you know volunteer and professional firefighters, you've envisioned this problem and you have a plan to deal with it. I would absolutely integrate this into your training, because you're going to be operating with, unless you do, with digital systems that don't have integrity as to intelligence or functionality. Let's go to the movies. Our movie this evening is the 1983 series on the German composer Wagner. Starring, it's a really all-star cast. Sir Richard Burton is Wagner, and it's got Vanessa Redgrave, Laurence Olivier, and Gabriel Byrne. So it's pretty amazing cast. It's long, so it's really for those of you who want to go deeper and learn more about Wagner, who's a very interesting character. I bring up Wagner because our interview this week is with Thomas Meyer. He and I sat down when we were in Sofia in Bulgaria to see Wagner's opera cycle, The Ring, and he gave a lecture that was fascinating. And afterwards, I sat down with him and we interviewed or recorded our conversation. There's so many themes in Wagner's series, The Ring. It's four operas. And the Sofia Opera Company put it on. It was quite enchanting, and Sofia is quite an enchanting place. But you have all sorts of themes, from the need to control the gold, to control the power on the planet, the use and abuse of power and governance, the importance of family wealth. It goes on and on. I never fail to be inspired when I talk to Thomas, and Again, we bring up the discussion of how to confront evil. It's something we discussed in our last two interviews. Anyway, this is a very interesting deep dive into philosophy, and you'll get a sense for the Thomas and the wonderful people he attracts to his events, his gatherings, and his operatic adventures. In fact, I'm hoping to go see Percival with him and his group in Bulgaria next year. So back to the Sofia Opera, it was well worth it. We have two questions in Ask Catherine, and they're both quite long, so I'm not going to read them all. The first one brings up AI and then talks about the technical language that Dr. Farrell and I use. Could we do an acronym database? If you go to the website, log in, and look at the section on the homepage called Core Concepts, you'll find introductions to many of the words that we use that are sort of core concepts at Celeri or in my discussion with Dr. Farrell. And I would suggest you use that for anything else that's a technical term. I just think Webster's Dictionary and Wikipedia does a fine job, so there's no need for us to duplicate their work here. But check out Core Concepts. I think you'll find it very useful. You had a great suggestion about talking about the debate that's going on in the churches about mankind versus humanity. And I will bring that up as an idea for Joseph. Then some great comments on the organ and on the possibility of gifting a Celeri report every month to people you're trying to interest. I think that's a great idea, and we have it on the checklist to do after we finish our next round. We're trying to get all the content up from when the site went down in February. So first, we want to get all of that taken care of. I would note we do a Give the Gift at Christmas time, so every subscriber is invited to give a subscription to someone for Christmas that will take them through the annual wrap-up. It's a really, if you want to interest somebody in the Celeri Report, it's a great way to do it. And then some other suggestions that are very good, and I have your whole note and comments in the notes, which you can find in PDF form. Just go to the commentary for tonight's Money and Market, and you can link to the full notes that I use to prepare and present and record the Celeri Report. And then the second one is on, I'll just read it. Hello, Catherine. Talk about shredding the Constitution. I wanted to make sure you and other subscribers were aware of the appalling decision just handed down by the United States Court of Appeals, Seventh Circuit. And it's about the smart grid. And I've put the links in the Celeri Report News, Trends, and Stories. But if you're interested in smart meters, I would definitely take a look at this. I think it's a very important precedent. And clearly coming down on the side of the pro-centralization team, whether government or industry. And then finally, one question on the hurricane. Usually hurricanes weaken well before they reach Hawaii and go south. This one is very strong and seems to be on the path for maximum damage to all the islands. More weather gentrification. Yeah, so we have thermal gentrification and weather gentrification. Yes, there was a decided very 90-degree angle right turn just in time. And you have to wonder whether it was prayers, miracle, or a negotiation in which Hawaii unfortunately had to say uncle. And as I said earlier, your guess is as good as mine. Okay, that's it for this evening. I'm flying from Toulouse to Netherlands tomorrow, and then on to Scotland the following week, where I'll talk with you on the next Money and Markets, first week of September. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to take a deep dive into mind control. Being here in Europe, where I think the mind control is sufficiently calmer or less, it really struck me how much I think events are being driven by mind control, and I think it's really important that we all explore and understand those if we're going to protect ourselves from it. next week, August 30th, The Minds of Men with Aaron and Melissa Dykes, outstanding new documentary from two very talented documentary makers, and I can't recommend it to you enough. We're going to be discussing the documentary, how they came to make it, what it talks about, why it's important. I can't recommend it to you enough. It's very, very long, so be prepared to sit down and watch the whole thing. I found it fascinating. I couldn't stop watching it. So better not to do it late at night. Start earlier in the day. Then September 6th, we are all targeted individuals now with Dr. Catherine Horton, a brilliant scientist and researcher who experienced the targeted individual phenomena and is doing a great deal to push back and document. Following those two presentations on mind control, we're then going to turn to what mind control can do to help you make money. Privatization, the oligarchy surges ahead. So until next week, The Minds of Men with Melissa and Aaron Dykes, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.